The Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, is not exactly a stranger to controversy. People who do that job seldom are. Indeed, you could argue that archbishops are meant to stir things up occasionally, and there may be a bit of that. When Rowan Williams speaks in the House of Lords today on a debate that he's leading dealing with debt and poverty and inequality, and he's with me. Good morning, Archbishop.
Good morning.
You're concerned about young people in particular getting into debt that they can't afford. Hasn't that always been the case?
I think we've seen in the last 10 years or so the development of a culture where debt is so normal for young people, and student loans have rather intensified that, that there's a more urgent need than ever for some teaching about financial literacy in schools and FE institutions. And I think that's getting more urgent by the day as the credit crunch impacts on more people.
You don't think they know?
I think they may know theoretically, though some of them don't even know that. And of course, some of them don't think forward 5 or 10 years about what the roll-on effects of a student debt might be and the accumulation that can come.
If you teach them, you're dealing, I suppose, with the demand side. But what about the supply side? What about those who push the debt?
I think one of the things that I'd really want to see as a matter of urgency reviewed here is both the interest rates charged by some doorstep lending companies.
And these are the sharks, the loan sharks.
Yes, and the advertising standards. Now, there was a commission a few years ago chaired by Lord Griffiths of Forest Vach, which made quite a thing about checking, auditing the practices, especially the advertising practices of loan companies, getting some respectable credit counselling groups in to do independent audits of these methods. I think that's something we could now push for very hard.
And what sort of methods do you have in mind, particularly?
I think the information that's available to a lot of people with doorstep lending companies is very minimal. People don't understand often what the rates of interest might be. They can find themselves being charged over 1,000% in a couple of years' time with rollover debts. There's the payday lending phenomenon, where people will post data check to their next payday, be given a payment, which involves effectively a charge of 25-30%, and that will again build up and roll over. That's the kind of thing which people A, need to know about, and B, needs to be capped in its full
pence. Well, a lot of people say much of that sort of thing should simply be made illegal, but
yes.
But isn't that slightly ducking the issue? Because although they inflict a lot of suffering on a lot of people, they're at the very bottom of the ladder, and it's a relatively small factor in this whole picture. Are you concerned about the much bigger picture, the availability of debt, what is going on in the banks at the moment?
I'm certainly concerned about the fact that the high street banks, the historic high street banks, because of the pressure they're under, are in a way ceasing to be high street banks. You know, they're withdrawing from some areas because they can't find reliable creditors. And that leaves a gap into which, of course, not so creditable companies will move. Now, I would like to see two things there. At least one is to see the strengthening of credit unions, that is, local, low-level, dependable credit. And there's pressure from the credit union movement to have the legislation loosened so that they can deal with small businesses, not just with individuals and families, deal with small local regeneration companies, that sort of thing. That would be a major step forward. But more broadly, I think we need to look, and I'm not quite sure where this examination would lead us, we need to look at what it means for a whole economy to be built up on spiraling, more or less uncontrolled credit. We've seen signs, and there was a report last weekend, signs that even the utility companies depend very, very heavily on this in a risky way. So that, basic utilities might be at risk.
And the fact is that a lot of institutions and individuals make a fortune, literally a fortune,
literally,
out of this.
Yes, people who run the loan companies are saying that they've never had it so good.
Well, people who run the banks until relatively recently were doing immensely well out of it. Did that bother you?
It does bother me, and now I think we're seeing the results of that in the credit crunch.
But what can you do about it? I mean, if you're bothered, are you bothered, for instance, by a man making, and this is slightly broadening it, but a man making billions, literally £3 billion out of hedge funds, which is a form of gambling. It's sophisticated, highly sophisticated gambling. Does that bother you?
It does bother me, yes. I haven't got any quick answers to it, though. My immediate concern today is looking at the bottom of the ladder and the way in which the credit crunch impacts so disproportionately on the most disadvantaged. Start there, because at least you can do something with building up the credit union world, the education, financial education.
But if you start there, do you have to then look at the gap between the poorest and the richest?
You have to, I think. It's a gap that everyone knows is broadening. And I think a growing number of people in society are unhappy about.
Government doesn't seem to be. Government thinks it's a positively good thing. Let me be clear about not that, that the gap is necessarily a positively good thing, but that there are so many very rich people now is a positively good thing.
It would be a positively good thing, I think, if it impacted across the board on the health of the economy. The way in which it does is not obvious, I think, to a lot of folk. Now, the government has had a review in the last few years of consumer credit, and it's come up with a few suggestions which have slightly improved the picture. I think now we need, as I've suggested, we need some more specific and targeted suggestions for the least advantaged.
So when somebody like John Hutton, government minister, says our overarching goal that no one should get left behind must not become translated into a sense that no one should be allowed to get too far ahead, do you sympathise with that?
I've got some questions about that, I think, because I think the more you have a disproportion between what people are actually earning and what they appear to be worth, the more you have astronomical sums with very little rationale behind them, the less credibility the whole thing has.
Your critics would say that's a pretty old-fashioned kind of Marxism.
My critics might say that, but I think I'd be quite happy to say that seems to me how we run a society that's confident with itself, that believes in itself.
What's the effect of this being going on, continuing unchecked?
Well, certainly among the poorest, the effect is the erosion of family life, the erosion of self-confidence. There's still a stigma about debt, even though it's taken for granted in so many quarters. But the stigma means people don't want to talk about it. They don't necessarily want to go and get the best advice about it. And for young people particularly, it does become crippling, especially for children.
And do you think that, putting aside that aspect of it, do you think that when we see people becoming, in the words of another former government minister, filthy rich, our attitude is, I want a bit of that myself, and therefore it's a good thing for society, which is what America has until very recently, at any rate, appeared to believe? Or do you think the opposite effect?
I think it's a bit of both, isn't it? I think there's a degree of envy and cynicism that's bred by disproportion, and that leads people to feel even more alienated from the rest of society, that the gulf is even greater between themselves, between people who can't manage their own affairs, can't take control of their circumstances, and these others. So there may be an element of, I'd like some of that, but there's also an element of, what kind of society is this? Why should I trust this system when it rewards some people so disproportionately in a way that doesn't connect at all with where I am?
You seem to be saying that the government politicians are more relaxed about that than you are, and that you're taking...
They seem to be. I wouldn't mind it if they were a little more worried.
And in what sense? How exemplified how?
Well, as I say, I don't want to go into the details of how the regulation of high salaries might be achieved, because my primary concern today is simply with the poorest end of the spectrum, where I think more can be done more rapidly in a more focused way.
But you're not saying, or are you, that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven?
I've heard that somewhere before, and I think it's set on quite good authority.
Archbishop, many thanks.
Thank you.